From Live Consulting, this is Cannabis Business Minds with your hosts, Kristen Yoder and Simone Simaluka-Radzins. On today's episode of Cannabis Business Minds, we have an interview with Alex Traverso, the Chief of Communications for the BMCR, aka Bureau of Medical Cannabis Regulations. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Sure.
So basically, just a quick bit about me. I've been with the Bureau now for a little bit more than 4 months. My first day of work here was the day before the election, so it was a really interesting time to get started. The day before Prop 64 passed,
Our
workload here at the Bureau expanded considerably. So, but yeah, I've was appointed to my position by Governor Brown, and have been a governor's appointee. I've served for three different governors in my career. I've worked in the Assembly. I've had a lot of government related experience, and it's exciting to be here. It's an exciting time to be a part of this.
Great. And yeah, thank you. I mean, clearly you guys have been up to a lot of good stuff and super busy. And, you know, before we get into our interview, just for everybody, can you just clarify, you know, what is the BMCR? What do you guys do? What do you not do in terms of cannabis regulation?
Well, we're basically the lead agency in charge of regulating both medicinal and adult use cannabis in our state. So what the Bureau does right now, and what we're doing, is we're currently working on drafting regulations for medical cannabis, and we could talk more about that later. But those are coming along pretty well. We're to the point where the proposed regulations are about to be rolled out for public comment, and will hopefully become the basis of where we start with our adult use regulations. That portion of work that came around when Prop 64 passed. So we're drafting regulations right now, and that's our primary focus. But as we move forward, our focus will start to shift, and we can touch on that in a little bit.
Okay, very cool.
Who are the other regulatory bodies involved in regulating cannabis in the state of California?
Right. It's important to note that, yeah, the Bureau is, while we may be the lead agency, we have a lot of different partners that we work with. The Department of Food and Ag handles the regulations for cultivation. And then we've got the Department of Public Health, and they are working on regulations for manufacturers. So anybody who wants to, if you're someone who wants to be licensed to make edibles, the Department of Public Health is where you go, and they've been very helpful also in helping us with regulations for testing labs, because that's a big part of the process as well, is getting testing labs licensed. So we have those partners, and you know, a lot of other partners around the table as well. The Board of Equalization is a partner of ours, because they've got to figure out the taxation questions and revenue collection, and we work with Fish and Wildlife on some environmental things, and Department of Pesticide Regulation is another agency that we work a lot with, because there will be standards and testing for, you know, different pesticides and what's acceptable and what's not. So lots of people we're working in a collaborative fashion with.
Absolutely. Can you talk to us a little bit about, like, when somebody's applying for this license, is because now there's the BMCR, there's all these other regulatory bodies. I think a lot of people get confused. They're like, well, who am I going to be talking to? Like, am I talking to the BMCR? Am I applying through them? Am I applying through, you know, the Department of Agriculture? Can you just explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, and I think a good resource, again, is our website, bmcr.ca.gov. That'll show you where responsibility lies for each, you know, what each agency is responsible for in terms of licensing ultimately. So it'll show that if you're somebody who wants to open a dispensary, if you're somebody who, if you're a testing lab, if you're in distribution, you're going to come to the Bureau to get licensed.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll show you, you know, obviously cultivation is food and ag, and manufacturing is public health. So it lays out, you know, kind of the different license types and where you would need to go if you wanted to pursue one of those license types.
I think another question we get a lot is Where, so people want to know where to get their licenses, but there's state licensing and then there's local licensing.
Correct.
And it seems, if I'm correct, correct me if I'm not, is that you have to be locally licensed to apply for a state license, correct?
You're absolutely correct. That's the interesting part of this is there is dual licensing. So, and there's local control. So what the state regulations will ultimately do is set forth a baseline and say, here are the minimum requirements. And if you're a city or a county and you want to go further and you want to say, I want to be more restrictive, then you can be. But the state regulations are the guideline. That's the bare minimum that you need to do if you're interested in participating in the cannabis industry in your city or county. So, right now you're seeing a variety of things around the state. You're seeing cities and counties who are in the process of enacting their own ordinance as it relates to cannabis. You're seeing some that are taking a kind of a wait and see approach and waiting for the state regulations to come out. And then you're seeing some who are just saying, no, this isn't for us, and saying, we're just going to ban cannabis activity in our county and leave it at that.
Yeah.
So you're seeing a lot. So, you know, I always tell people, if you look at the state of California and outline now, the what's happening in each county, it probably makes up looking like a patchwork quilt because everyone's kind of doing things a little bit differently.
Absolutely, exactly.
Ultimately, when we are ready to start licensing, the Bureau's going to need to know what's happening in each county because, like you said, if somebody applies for a license for a dispensary and their business is in a county where there's a ban, they can't get a license.
Absolutely. I mean, and that actually segues perfectly into our next question. I mean, there is clearly this community around local governments, local licensing, and then this whole state thing. And how, you know, if you think about the idea of almost an international corporation, you've got all these different units, and then you've got this master unit that is kind of overseeing everything, right? And you need to ensure that through that, that there's, you know, transparency, that there is one system, that it's, you know, that there's not double doing of things. And so my question to you is, you know, what's the plan to ensure that local governments aren't charging too much for a local license through the fees or the taxes, and that it really is going to be sustainable for all these businesses going forward?
Yeah,
I'm going to tell you that's a real challenge, and it's going to continue to be a challenge. And the best thing that we are able to do now is to really get out and go around the state and try and educate people as much as we can from experiences that have taken place in other states, things mm-hmm. that we've witnessed, things that we've talked with other state regulators about, whether it's in, you know, folks from Oregon or Colorado or Washington, and sort of relaying some of the lessons that they've learned and we've learned from them about, you know, because ultimately the best way to, you know, if regulation is what you're trying to achieve, you have to make it worthwhile for people to come into regulation. And the best way to do that is to figure out a good, it's to not make regulations overburdensome, to keep costs down, because mm-hmm. obviously that's the driving factor for most people is if it's not profitable for them to continue to do business because taxes are high or license fees are high, then it's counterproductive. Then it defeats the purpose of us, you know, creating regulations if we can't eliminate the black market.
Yeah.
And
the best thing we can do basically is talk to people and say, hey, this is if you want to be successful and you want these illegal businesses to come into the light, so to speak, then here are the things that you need to consider. And one of those things is not making taxes too heavy,
mm-hmm. especially when it comes to the consumers. They're not trying to pay 30% taxes on their mm-hmm. products, which mm-hmm. my question is, Washington had such a high excise tax on cannabis. I think it was 37%.
It was 37%, yeah.
Could control from the state, like if with Prop 64, obviously a lot of that is going to change over the years. There will be amendments to it. Would it be possible or is it realistic that there could be an amendment that limits the amount that cities and counties charge and taxes so that they don't go insane and drive people out of there?
Yeah, ultimately, again, it's still local control. So we and you know, I don't know what the future holds, obviously, and the legislature is obviously active.
Mm-hmm.
As far as all things cannabis, we've seen more than 40 pieces of legislation already.
Yeah, we heard that.
Working their way through the Capitol. So there's obviously a lot of interest, and I think as we go forward, you know, there are going to be things that come up that we think need to be fixed, and the legislature is keeping an eye on that, and we're comfortable with how that process works out. So, but ultimately, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to go to local governments and tell them what they can and can't do. You know, we'll see what happens, but I think the market will dictate a lot of that. I mean, when they see if the tax rate is too high, mm-hmm. there will be problems and people will be vocal about that, and then they'll have to reassess. So there's going to be a period of time after January 1 when we're getting started where we're going to need a good 6 months at least to figure out where everything's at and how things are working.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And before we get on to our next question about seed to sale, I have a question. Compared to other states, is California unique to have this dual licensing of the local and then the state?
You know, I think I can't speak for every state because I'm not familiar with everyone's regulations.
Uh-huh.
But we are certainly unique in the fact that there are so many jurisdictions that we have in California. I mean, just population alone, just the size of our state is going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
The fact that there are over 500 cities and counties and everybody does things a little bit differently is going to be a big challenge. So that's a big consideration for sure.
Totally.
And not to mention California is the sixth largest economy in the world. So you've got a lot of money and a lot of big players that have a lot of sway.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my experience in government, you know, there's always this desire for California to be the trendsetter and to be, you know, the first one to do X, Y, or Z. Well, in this case, I think everybody's really comfortable with the fact that we're not the first one. But we do have some other states' experiences to look at. And while it's not exactly an ideal one-to-one comparison, because our state is so much larger than the others who have gone down this road, there's still a lot we can learn, and there's still a lot of different lessons we can take away and use as we create our own regulations.
Excellent. So as Simone had mentioned about the track and traced software for the state, I know that there are a few counties up north that have been using SICPA. I know Humboldt did the proof of origin, and from what I read, it sounds to be really successful. Has the state received any RFPs from these providers, or do you have any idea of how that's going right now?
Yeah, that's all I can really tell you on that is that we're moving along and things are progressing, and a lot of that is with the Department of Food and Ag. They're the ones that are overseeing the track and trace.
Okay,
that makes sense.
Yep.
So the Cal Cannabis program can provide a better update on that, and you know, so we're comfortable where that is, and they're on top of it, and that's pretty much all I can really add about that at this point.
Okay, I understand. Yeah. I mean, we're all waiting for these draft pieces of regulation, so we understand
that
you can't tell us anything. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
But if you can, we'd like to dive a little bit deeper into some of the certain, like, license types that there are under the medical program. It seemed like, so we went to your guys' session that you had in 2016, like fall of 2016, and I was in the distribution, you know, breakout session, and it seemed at that point in time, there was still a lot of uncertainty of, you know, how's packaging going to be regulated? How is who's responsible for lab testing? And really, it all seemed to focus around distribution. So do you mind talking to us a little bit about how do you see it from the BMCR perspective of what is this distribution model that the state will be utilizing?
Okay, sure. Right now, you know, when we talk about how we're going to work toward aligning what's in MCRSA and AUMA, everything is pretty, you know, let me start again here. As we talk about, the process of regulations, we're working on medical now, and we feel like when we have medical regulations ready to go, a lot of what's in the medical side of things is going to be transferable, because you're talking about similar things. You're talking about the product and how it's grown, and you know how a dispensary will look and the requirements for a dispensary. So there's a lot of things that are similar. Well, the one difference obviously is the distribution piece of it, and the fact that in the language in Prop 64, it allows for some degree of vertical integration, right? You can have it doesn't call for an independent distributor. You can have dual license, or you can have licensing for, you can be a grower, and you can have be a distributor as well. Whereas on the medical side of things, all the medicinal cannabis and the products are required to go through a distributor prior to market. So it's an independent distributor that you need to go to. It can't be, you know, you can't be your own distribution service. So that's really something that we're trying to figure out right now, because in the governor's budget, he mentioned that, you know, for the sake of ease of regulations, it doesn't make sense to have two completely different paths. As much as possible, we want to align and sort of reconcile the medical regulations and the adult use regulations. And this is the sort of the biggest piece that's still being worked through, is trying to figure out which way we're going to go. Because it doesn't make sense to have two different sets of rules, because then it's just going to, what all that would mean is that people would be less likely to follow them, because they're either too confusing, they're hard to understand, or they're just, you know, just generally don't make sense. And we've heard a lot of input on this, and I think that what you'll see next month when the medical regulations are proposed is kind of the direction that we want to go. So that's forthcoming, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. And people will have a chance to look at what we've proposed then and continue to provide feedback and let us know what they think.
Mm-hmm. With that said, there's distribution and then there's transport. And I know that all the manufacturers, I mean, no one really wants distribution except for
distribution companies.
Exactly, except for like the alcohol lobby, you know, who wants to get into it, or other groups that have used distribution, already have distribution set up. Exactly. But it seems like all of the manufacturers are really pushing against it. And I'm wondering if the transport license could be used by these companies, or is that still questionable?
It's still questionable. Like I said, some of these things, it's still, you know, I know our regulations are coming pretty quick here, but it's still, you know, maybe a little too soon to discuss the direction on this. Before, because it's, like I said, it's one of the biggest issues that we still need to address. And, you know, we're going to be looking for a lot of input come next month from people who are already in the distribution business and have opinions on how things should run, and hopefully how it runs smoothly. So that's why every place we go, we're soliciting input and saying, hey, these regulations are coming out, please read them. You know, tell us what you think. Tell us if something just doesn't make sense. You know, whatever, good, bad, and indifferent. We wanna hear from people.
California would be the only state utilizing a distribution license type of scheme, correct? Or it seems like in Colorado they're completely vertically integrated.
Oregon has a wholesale license, but you don't have to go through wholesale. And Washington, I don't think, has one. But I don't know. I mean, we have so many states now that actually have programs. Yeah. But we're more familiar with the West Coast.
Yeah, right. And that's. I think that was the thought process with Prop 64 as well, is just to model it after what other states other states do and allow for vertical integration.
Mm-hmm. I guess maybe some of these questions are a little bit like, hey, Simone, wait until you see the draft regulations. So tell me if the answer is that, and I totally don't mind.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do, because we're happy to talk more after the fact when you guys have a chance to see what's actually in there too.
So we'll have you back.
But for
definitely.
Now, we can discuss as much as we can.
Yeah. Well, could you provide any insight? I guess so. We had on our last podcast, we were talking to the state of Oregon and some operators there. There's like a lot of movement right now in pesticides and illegal pesticides, and so that kind of emerged with the topic of lab testing. So, and maybe if it's wait until April, I'm totally okay with that, but can you give us some guidance on who's responsible for lab testing right now in the regulation?
Sure so the testing labs will be licensed by the Bureau. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we're working with, initially that responsibility was with the Department of Public Health. So it's been transferred to us, but again, we're still working pretty closely with them to, compile regulations for testing labs. But, you know, honestly, one of the things, one of the main takeaways for us from the experience in other states is seeing what's happening in Oregon with sort of an insufficient number of mm-hmm. of testing labs, and then having a backlog of product that they can't get to the shelves because the process of going through the testing labs is taking quite a bit of time. So we're aware of that, and you know, again, we're trying to do what we can to make sure that ultimately, come January 1, there is an adequate number of testing labs available to test the products and get safe product to market.
With testing, I think Oregon was the only state that was mandating pesticide screening for all of their cannabis products, be it extract mm-hmm. or the flower. And California has had recent studies coming out showing yeah. that practically everything has pesticides in it, concentrates, flower, etc. And I know it would be incredibly progressive for California to mandate pesticide screening. Is that even a thought in the BMCR's mind when it comes to regulation? Or is it more like, let's just make sure we have enough labs to test products now, and then we'll maybe up the regulation?
Yeah, I'm going to say there's going to be a standard, and we're working with the Department of Pesticide Regulation to work on those portions of the regulations. But we've definitely had our eyes on these stories that have come out about yeah. Levels of pesticides in cannabis, and you know, our focus originally again was medical cannabis and trying to get medicine to patients, and that mm-hmm. was really the focus. So we're still very focused on providing safe medicine to patients that need it. So there's been a lot of thought and a lot of focus on that, and we're going to continue to work with DPR. And when you see our medical regulations, that'll be pretty evident that we've put in that work.
Excellent.
No, that's like super good. There was, I don't know, did you see the NBC article or investigation report that 93% of the
yes.
pesticides failed, and they tested like four? Yeah. Oh my God, it's alarming, really. So
I stopped smoking bud and using concentrates because I just reached a point where it's like,
you just don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. And so many people are like, oh, we've been smoking this stuff since the 70s. But that's not an excuse to do that.
Right.
You know?
And that's one of the things that when we do have regulations in place, and it's, say this time next year, we want people to want to go into a dispensary to purchase the things that they need, as opposed to continuing to buy from somebody who's not licensed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because they'll know, they'll be able to know that the product they're getting from a dispensary is going to be safe. It's going to have been tested. Whereas, there's an unfamiliarity with what you're getting from a dispensary that's not licensed, or from somebody who hasn't had their product go through any testing.
Yeah.
So,
Interesting.
Moving everything toward the legal market.
Yeah. And well, and so then moving to 2018, January 1st, 2018, it's everybody's, you know, eye on the prize of, oh, it's, we got to get ready. We have to get everything up and running so we can apply for this license in 2018. And January 1st, 2018, so this is a two-part question, is that the date that people can start applying? And
that's, yes. Yeah. That is the date. So just to tackle that first part there, everything we're doing right now, we've to give you a sense of our timeline, I touched on it a little bit, but next month is when we expect to roll out our medical regulations, and that'll kick off a 45-day comment period where people have the chance to, you know, a sufficient amount of time to read the regulations, whether they want to read them, you know, start to finish, front to back, whatever the case may be, or they just have one particular section that they're interested in that applies to them, and then provide us with feedback. And we're going to go around the state. We've held a bunch of hearings in the past, informational sessions and sort of pre-regulatory meetings where we talk to people and got their feedback. And we're going to do the same thing. We're going to have these sort of listening sessions that provide people with the opportunity to come out and just tell the Bureau, what do you think? You know, and we're going to capture all that feedback and then go back and say, okay, do we need to make substantial changes to our regulations based on what we've heard? And if we do, that'll kick off another 45-day comment period where we change the regulations and then go back out. And, you know, we've built all of that into our timeline. So we feel pretty good, and we've put in a lot of work, and we've talked to a lot of people. So our hope is that we just need the one 45-day period. If we need the two, we've got the time for it. If not, that's great. That just gives us a little bit more time to start our work on the recreational side of things and have everything ready to go so we can start accepting applications later this year. Because as you know, I mean, logically to be issuing licenses on January 2nd, the 1st is a Sunday, yeah. I believe. So January 2nd, we've got to start moving to that direction. I keep saying January 1st.
Yeah.
I, as far as I know, no one's going to be coming into this building on a Sunday to get licenses. So yep.
Don't put it past them.
Yeah. So January 2nd, when people come in, we, you know, in order to issue licenses, we'll have already had to accept applications. So everybody feels pretty confident about where we're at and the timeline and the work that we've done. So, you know, that's our mandate, is to hit that target, and we intend to do it.
I'm curious. There's medical and recreational licensing. Why would someone choose one over the other? Why, or would there be someone who wants the medical, they're different, right? Like, you're not recreational if you're medical, and vice versa.
There'll be one license. So if you're interested, if you wanted to say you're going to have a testing lab, it wouldn't be just a medical testing lab or a recreational testing lab. You would be licensed. There's just a license for testing labs, and there's just a license for dispensaries. So it's not specific to one or the other. You're licensed, and then you can choose what you opt to do. If you're, you know, we've seen dispensaries here in Sacramento, for instance, and talked to some people, and they, you know, whether it's their business plan is what it is, or that's just their specialty, they've said, hey, you know, even though recreational is coming, our plan is just to stay with medical services, because that's what we do, and that's completely up to them. I don't know that it makes sense to go one route or the other. I think it's just people are in business for the reasons they're in business.
So you could only be one or the other, but the license is the same for both? Or could you be both?
There's a, if you were going to be a dispensary for, yeah. Are you
yeah.
saying?
Yeah, for example, a dispensary.
Yeah, there's just one license. So it just, it depends. I mean, you could, you know, theoretically you could say, well, I'm going to have both. I'm going to offer recreational, I'm going to have recreational patients, and I'm going to have medical patients. I mean, that's what we've seen in Oregon. In Oregon, if you walk into a dispensary, they'll take your ID and they'll scan it, and they'll say, okay, so we've got you down as a recreational patient, or we know that you're a medical patient, and then you go into the back and you're able to buy things accordingly based on what your status is. So if you're a recreational customer, you can go in and you can buy one edible, or you can buy a certain amount of flower or whatever it is. And that's it. And then if you decide to go next door and try to go to the dispensary there, they'll scan your ID and say, no, that's it for you for today. You have one shot. Mm-hmm. And if you're a medical patient, you can go in and, you know, you can buy whatever you need.
Interesting. Well, what about,
so those are the differences.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the differences then in like manufacturing then between, you know, a medical and recreational manufacturing license? Like if I'm making edibles.
Would it be based on potency like in Washington or I think Oregon, Colorado got rid of medical, but where it was 1,000.
No, Colorado didn't get rid of medical. Washington.
Yeah,
Washington.
The manufacturing, again, manufacturing would fall with the public health.
So
their set of regulations. But I can tell you that, public health will roll out their regulations at a particular time, and they'll have their own sort of listening tour, and Food and Ag will do the same with the cultivation regulations, and then we'll have ours. So everyone will have the opportunity to, you know, digest that section of the regulations and provide their feedback.
Oh, cool. Wow, that's so interesting.
Makes me worried that
too many chefs in the kitchen.
The medical cannabis program in California, which is the cannabis industry in California, is going to get merged with recreational and then eventually phased out. I hope not, but what's the point of, I guess, other than potency, what's the point of getting your medical recommendation if you can go into the same store as a recreationally? Well, and also I saw in Prop 64 that if you want to be a medical patient, once it goes into effect, you have to register with the state as a medical patient, which has not been the case, until now. And I know a lot of people are not comfortable going on record with the state that they are a cannabis patient.
Interesting. So, Alex, can you elaborate, like, on January 1st, 2018, when all this stuff, like, medically happens, do patients then need to go register with the state according to the new rules?
It's my understanding is that the medical card program will still be the same. Mm. Where they, you know, people who have a card to be able to go and get, you know, they're a medical patient, that'll remain is my current understanding of it.
Okay.
And you know, the differences obviously would be in what you can buy. And the frequency which you can go in and purchase the products that you need, and also at the rate at which it's taxed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's the way that you're going to keep both sides of it viable is to make it, if you're going to tax one side of it, then I would imagine jurisdictions would probably put more tax on the recreational half of it and keep it more accessible for medical patients.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Which makes me
think. And that's what I think that works best in other states as well.
Yeah. Before we get to the speed round, we are, you know, having an extreme pulse on what's happening at the federal level with the new administration, their viewpoint on medical, reading between the lines or just reading their stance on recreational or adult use. We just talked about that California looks like medical and adult use will probably be implemented at the same time, regulation still pending. From your perspective as a regulatory body and representing, you know, the citizens of California in this industry, are you afraid? And if so, why? If not, why?
I can certainly see why people are concerned, because again, you're seeing a lot of people who are excited about the direction the industry is going. They want to be involved. And so they're working right now to build up their business, so they're ready to go on January 1. I mean, we get calls all the time and emails from people who are saying, I know I can't get a license until January 1, but what can you tell me? Like, how can I get a jump start on it right now? What can I do? And our main advice is always, hey, you know, go to your local government, find out, educate yourself on what the regulations are in your area. And, you know, do what you need to do to get yourself in good standing with your local government so you're ready to be licensed on, you know, January 2nd. But at the same time, you know, there is some uncertainty about what the federal government will or won't do. And, you know, right now it's just all it's been is words. I can understand why people are anxious, like I said, because they are putting in a level of effort and commitment and resources to getting their businesses together. But there's been no actual plan. It's just been talk. And that's how we're approaching it. I mean, we're continuing to move forward with the work that we're doing. We can't take our eye off the ball. It's, you know, our time frame is too aggressive. We need to put all of our focus on getting our regulations right, and being ready for January 2018. And that's the direction we've taken. We're going to keep working until somebody tells us to do otherwise.
Great. Well, yeah, we need California to get regulated and not give the feds a reason to come in and regulate
exactly.
it for us. Because
California, luckily we've got elected officials on our side who are committed to pushing back and to protecting the you know, the things that the people of California voted for and said that they want. So. I think that's a good thing. We've got people fighting for us and for the things that we voted for.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's get into the speed round. And our first question is, if someone is just getting into the industry, what is something that they should know? But you kind of went over that in our previous questions. So I'm going to go the next question.
Well, no. If there's anything besides talking to your local government, what do you suggest people should know? Business-wise, you know, after they've talked to the local government, what else should they be knowing?
I think that's the main thing is knowing what's allowed in your local government, getting yourself in position to do business in your city, in your county, and because you need to be able to show that good standing to the state to get your license. So that's a big part of it. And so I'm not sure that there's anything that I would consider more important than that at this point, just because not everyone will get a license on the first day. But if you're gonna get yourself as close as possible to getting a license as quickly as you can, I mean that's a huge first step. So I can't really emphasize that enough.
No, yeah, it's definitely. True. I mean, if you're in the cannabis industry, you need to be talking politics. You need to be knowing your local government.
Mm-hmm. They need to know you.
They're the ones that are giving you the license for us to even get the second license. So
right, and if there's something you don't like about what's happening in your local government, now's your time to be active and to be vocal and to be make yourself a part of the process. So.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. The second question, and actually the final question for you. Okay. Where do you see BMCR a year from now?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I feel like we're going to be successful. I laugh because our lieutenant governor, who's been a huge proponent of the cannabis industry and was obviously a driving force behind Proposition 64, had a great line where he said, he was saying how he worries about getting this done and getting it done right. And he feels comfortable with the direction we're going because at the end of the day, he feels like he's almost the poster child for the effort. And if everything goes well, no one will remember that he was the poster child for the effort. You know, it'll only be if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
And I feel like a year from now, I feel like we're going to be in a position where we're still going to be learning. There's going to be things. There's going to be growing pains. There's going to be probably some, hiccups. Maybe a bump in the road. But these are things that aren't going to be fixed by more time. We need to see the data that comes out of the first, like I said, the first 6 months of people coming forward and applying for licenses and what happens and how do we ramp up our enforcement to, get people who are still resisting coming into regulation to move them towards regulation, because, you know, there's going to be so many people, and there already have been businesses that are responsible, that pay their taxes, that are open and transparent. And, you know, we want them to continue wanting to do that. And it doesn't help if they have five other businesses around them that haven't gotten a license and that aren't in regulation. So, I see us building a lot more infrastructure here. I feel like our staff is going to increase quite a bit. I know it is, and that's going to happen relatively soon. We have, I think, 14 employees the last time I checked.
Oh, wow.
And by and July 1 comes around, we'll have a new budget, and I think we're going to bring on anywhere from 50 to 75 more people. So, and a lot of that is going to be in terms of ramping up our licensing program and our enforcement program. So there's going to be a ton of growth here at the Bureau. And so I would think a year from now, we're going to be a lot bigger. We're going to be in a position where we're going to be focused on, you know, the regulating half will be done, but we're going to be looking at the licensing and enforcement and continuing to move forward and find those areas where we still need to maybe work with the legislature to you know, fix any potential unintended consequences or just things that don't work or add new license types, just different things. But it's all going to be based on feedback from people in the industry. So even though the regulations will be done, I don't think we'll ever stop saying, hey, let us know what's working and what's not working, you know, and continue to provide your feedback so we can get this system running as smoothly as it possibly can.
Continual improvement.
Yeah, I think exactly. People will definitely keep letting you know how they feel as well. So there should be no lack of community input, that's for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, I don't, you know, I'm not in the, well, I guess I kind of am, but I was going to say I'm not in the business of tooting our own horn, but, you know, we get out and we talk to people as much as we possibly can. We emphasize all the time, you know, call us, email us, you know, get in touch, get on our listserv for information. You know, just generally be in contact with us. We want to know. I mean, if you don't agree with us, that's fine. We'd rather have your opinion and think about things from a different way. If the end result is it makes our regulations stronger and makes everything better. So I don't think we'll ever change from that. And we'll continue to get out into the community and go to different you know, meetings and forums and panels and all these things that we've been doing and going up and down the state to talk to everybody. So, I think that's good. And I think, I hope people appreciate the fact that we are willing to do that and they feel like their voices are heard.
Yeah. Well, I think you guys are doing a great job and I'm really glad to hear that you're so open and ready and willing to work with all the different communities. And I want to thank you for joining us on our show today. It was awesome talking with you.
Yeah, thank you. Alex Traverso, Chief of Communications for the BMCR. Thank you so much for joining Cannabis Business Minds.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a great day.
That was so interesting.
It's nice to be able to talk to someone who can give us answers, even if they're not able to answer us yet, but at least give us some sort of informed something.
Yeah, and kind of just to clarify a few things. I mean, my biggest takeaway from it was how open they are to work with the community, which to me is essential in ensuring that the regulation is the best for everybody and that they're actually going to these stakeholder meetings and listening and like being able to do the public comment and be flexible and see what works and see what doesn't.
Well, and creating a citizen panel for the BMCR to represent all of the different factions and people with experience to help them. If there's one thing I love/hate about California is it's so incredibly democratic that you can have
a
tax on the ballot as well as, you know, like removing a tax or something.
Yeah, like both of them are.
Yeah, so then people are consistently voting for infrastructure improvement and then voting against taxes and we get nowhere because we are able to say exactly what we think. So hopefully in this case, it will be good.
Yeah.
It will be a good thing.
Oh, I really hope so. What was your biggest takeaway?
I was really surprised that there are only one license. Yeah, so that
I didn't get that, actually.
I mean, especially with Oregon, the fact, the whole glut of supply and the whole holdup with labs is because they were medical labs. They were not licensed for recreational, exactly. But then all of the stores had gone recreational, no longer medical. Whereas this is like, you guys can do both or one or the other, which makes me wonder
if it's about to be paralleled.
Or why would you choose to do recreational.
Especially right now.
If you can't do vertical integration, but medical does not have anything against vertical integration.
Quite the contrary. I think that the adult use of allows, you don't have a distribution, and medical is forced distribution.
What? I thought it was the opposite.
No.
Oh, well, I guess if there's only one license type anyways,
yeah,
then
yeah,
everyone has to use distribution.
Right? So that's interesting, where it's like,
No state did that.
No, I mean, well, right? We don't know.
They all started
states
out with,
I think,
medical.
That if you guys are listening out in the audience, if you're from a state other than the West Coast, please, we would love to know what's happening and if you guys have distribution in your license types and if that's good or if that's bad.
Or do you have recreational and medical in the same state, and how are they separate?
And how are they truly separate? Yeah.
Yeah.
So please, like, go into our Facebook group, Cannabis Business Minds, and let us know there, or subscribe on iTunes. But you can't communicate with us if you subscribe on iTunes.
Unless you leave us a glowing review, and then we'll find you just
yes
to thank you and give you chocolate.
Oh, absolutely.
Cannabis Business Minds is recorded by Simone Samaluka-Radzins and Kristen Yoder. Produced and edited by Gustavo Bulgach at East Venice Recording Studios. Podcast music is by Ketza. You can find more episodes of the show on our website, liv-consulting.com, and you can also subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.